So really it's something to go over, because the more you know, you reflect on it, then there's more material how to look at it in your meditation like this. And the meditation again is something that especially coming from other types of meditation, it takes a little bit to get more used to. Vedantic meditation isn't for experience, something new, gaining something new. It's not that. It's clarifying, you know. It's helping to see things from the angle you already understand, because you're looking at something from that angle, making that one more established in the mind and countering other ways of thinking that are pulling me in other directions. So mananam is to churn it, to remove doubts. Nididhyasanam isn't. Nididhyasanam, you look at it from that angle, or you think of the teachings in that way and hold them in the mind. That's what it is, like this. And the Nididhyasanam, he also gave the two different ones. If you remember, internal and external, both of those. Both are very important because there are two things that we need, that Vedanta is looking at. One is, you know, myself, that I have this idea that I'm this limited person, this limited jiva, body mind. So that one has to be loosened up and has to be understood that that's not the case. And then external, because I take the external world to be a reality, and I have to understand that it's, you know, that it's mitya. It's like the snake. It doesn't have an absolute reality, that's actually what he's going to be discussing in this next portion, that it doesn't have a substantial reality, that it's like the snake and rope, that they really, it's the Brahman everywhere. So both of these need to be shaken up. Both of these have to be shaken up and understood. And a nice thing that's said about it is that a devotee is going to go and pray and see the God out in and through everything, Ishvara in and through everything. But then what about that person, the devotee, stays humble, I'm this poor limited one, in this one Mukunda Mala, I think it's called, one text I studied with my Sanskrit teacher when I was studying Sanskrit. So there, the devotee prays, may I be the, you know, Ishwarasya Dasasya 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 Dasaha, for our Sanskrit people, the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the God. So they want to stay, I'm the servant, like this, which is an attitude for humility that's good to have, but any attitude like that, it's a preparation, because still an attitude. Attitude is still preparation, because still thought. So the devotee will see externally the God in and through everything, but what about myself? The yogi just meditating himself, find, okay, I'm not this limited thing, but then the world, where did it come from, what is it, still have to deal with the world. So both are needed. So Vedanta says you have to understand both. Understanding one won't suffice. It's not going to, you won't totally go beyond the boundaries like this. So this is important thing with this. And one thing also is, as one question somebody sent, which is a very good question, is that it's difficult to do, difficult to look like this. So there are two points about it. One point about it is, the main thing Vedanta is understanding. It's not to get to something else. So it's really, because what you're looking for is effortless, what you already are all the time. So the fact you're a conscious being, it's there, it's not something. The fact that externally you're seeing, you know, existence in and through everything, you're seeing it. It's what's first and effortless. So it's the understanding which is the important thing. Now, of course, whatever I understand so far, yes, that too, see from that angle, that yes, does take some effort. So some effort there would be involved. And how that works is because I've counter ideas. Just like when you do meditation just on my breath or my mantra. I'm sitting there quietly, I'm repeating Om Namah Shivaya quietly, I just want to be with that. As I'm focusing on other ideas will come in, I have to bring my attention back, like this. So same way, if you meditate on the ways that he said, like let's say on, you know, the points how he says that he said external, and with shabda, with the point is given by the text. So say, okay, external, everything is akanda ekarasam, like we said. Everything external is one unbroken, and homogeneous consciousness. So I bring my attention to it, other thoughts will come in. So yes, so it takes effort to go back to it. In my day-to-day life, I want to see God in through everything. Yes, takes effort to see that because other ideas will come in instead. You know, I'm going to say yes, I'm going to meditate on, I'll see that God is in and through everything behind. Then I'll see the news and I'll think this person, the God's in and through everybody except for that person. This is what we do. We'll want to give exceptions. Berkeley, United States is the land of bumper stickers, and Berkeley is the capital. And so I lived in the capital for many years, so I saw a lot of interesting ones. One was, God bless everyone, and it's like in parentheses, like all included, or I don't remember the exact wording, but something like that, all included, like meaning, even though you think somebody, the God's even in and through that one too. So the thing is, then it does take effort to stay with the vision, yes, because to change any habit takes effort, there's no doubt. Because habit means I'm doing it. It's like cycling downhill. No effort needed. But to do something else takes effort, right? It takes effort, you know. My broken Hindi that I used to speak to family in India, and then my wife here and there will correct. And even though I heard many times, I make the same mistake because it takes effort to change how I say. It's effort. It takes effort. Even because you already used to saying in a certain way, so take some effort to do differently like this. So one thing about this that's Swami Paramartanandaji, a lot of the text, this is interesting, I don't know him in person, but I know of him through my teacher, and I've studied many of the texts through his recordings like this, very interesting, because he's so methodical. And one of Swami Dayanandaji's most brilliant disciples. So he says one form of nididhyasanam is alert living. Because like this alertness, I decide I'm going to see, Ishwara through everybody. And it's a very good thing. Take something on for a few weeks. Just try to have that vision be prominent. This or anything else. So when you do that, then it takes alertness to do it. Right? Just like for my posture, sit straight instead of rammed forward. It takes alertness. Right? And then, how I pronounce things, takes alertness, It takes alertness to say, if I'm new to Sanskrit and don't know an Indian language, to the difference between ta and ta, ta and ta, very hard for me to tell, dental, and with the aspirate or not, ta, 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 very hard. And then to be alert when I'm saying a word, I say patanam or patanam, takes alertness. What you do with alertness regularly, the more you're alert doing it, the more it becomes easier because repetition makes it part of your mind. This is the magic of Raja Yoga and of repeating something, abhyasa. You do it regularly, it gets easier. So if I put effort 1 month, every day I remind myself here and there. This is, again, an example. I see the God in and through everything. I do that. If I put effort for a month and I remind myself, so maybe most of the time I forget. Some of the time I remember, then it becomes more easier to do. Then maybe I put aside, I do a different practice. A few months later, I take that one up again. If I did it for a few months in the year like that, afterwards it'll become more and more natural and easier like this. So this is where, yes, that's why one has to keep doing it. Because again, this is one thing they say, Vedanta, there can be paroksha jnanam. I understand it. But I understand it just... I understand the whole picture, but here, just getting the whole picture takes quite a bit. But I understand it here. The reason it didn't change everything is because other habits are overshadowing it, like this. And certain other things. I haven't done the proper viveka vairagya. The whole preparation hasn't been totally done also. But part of it then is this alertness to stay with it so the other habits don't overshadow it, like this. So this is a little about this nididhyasanam. And again, if you take these, as I said, these six, and these six really, it's four, because the nirvikalpa is something, the absorption happens on its own. You can't make the absorption happen. So if the absorption happens, yes, then you stay and you enjoy it. But then if the absorption is disturbed, you keep taking on what you had. We have the drishya and shabda, right? Drik drishya viveka, internally, or with the ideas given by the text, like this. So you take any of these four, the internal or external of these two different types that we've studied, you do those regularly. If you have a certain time of day, you keep doing it. For me, when I get up, till I go to the meditation, I get up, I drink some water, I brush teeth, shower, all the stuff I do. So, you know, 15, 20 minutes later, I'm in the meditation. That time, most of that time, I'm doing one of these things. And so time is used for that. So you find a time you can be doing it regularly, and then becomes more and more. Because a regular time is a good way to do. Maybe you're washing dishes regularly, you work in the garden, you walk right, something. Of course, your meditation time is very good too. Don't skip that. But you find other times like this. So in any case, that's a little about this nididhyasana, how it is as part of this. Because it's really three rods you're using. Shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam. You keep churning with all of those when doing this. So let's continue where we got to. And we're on verse number 32 now. Yeah. So 32 is saying like this. Avacche naschida bhasaha tritiya swapna kalpitaha vigneyas trividho jivaha tatradyav paramarthikaha. So the jiva is to be known as threefold. The conditional consciousness of avachinasat, avachinachit, it says here. The reflected consciousness, chidabhasa, and the one imagined in the dream, swapnakalpita. This is the three terms he gives here for these. Among them, the first is of the nature of Brahman. So as we said, this is like a new chapter. He's giving the different angle to view this by. So in this, I believe, the 2 weeks ago, we mentioned about these three different levels, but here he's giving it from perspective of the individual. We said as sat, but now we're saying as the individual. So it says there are three, you know. We're not just dual personality, we're triple personality, threefold. So he's saying three things. First, he said we have our paramarthika. That's the first one he said. Let's take it from the other side. So first one, paramarthika one, but one we're going to say the swapna. This one is projected, because what's in the dream, it's totally projection of your mind. In your mind, though, that whole world is projected. You're an individual as part of that world. When I'm sitting here meditating, and I if it ever happens to you and you're meditating that you start mind wandering to other things, if it ever happens to you, you'll notice that it's kind of like a dream. Same thing as a dream. And there's a dream where there's a whole idea going on in there. So you're playing part of it. So you're an individual in that, right? In your dream or in your imagination, in your dream or daydream or meditation dream. You're playing a part in there. So that's an individual. That's a projected individual. Because I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, okay, later in the day, I walk to the farmer's market. And maybe they do have these vegetables and this, and I have to stay very cautious. Oh, I have to remember my mask. That whole individual there, it's a projected individual that I'm identifying with there. So this is projected, right? So we have paramarthika. This is pratibhasika. Actually, pratibhasika is even more grammatically correct for this case. Pratibhasika. So pratibhasika. So the pratibhasika jiva, the projected individual. That's a projection I have. Is it not big enough? The text. Mm-hmm. Oops. I'll write it big. So. Pratibhasika. So this is reflection, projected. The projected imagine in my mind. So there's, this is one. Second one is, one, right now I'm an individual dealing this world. We call this the objective reality, because objective, that, you know, if I hold something in front of you here, we all see it, the object, we all say it's glasses. So then it's objective because we all see the same object. It's not just that we, that it's from my own mind, because many minds. But then I'm going to say, you know, no, this isn't, this is a Lego set. Then that's my own projection. Projection from my mind, which is, you know, can be some strange idea like this. So, pratibhasika, and then we have vyavaharika. Or vyavaha. Thank God for erasers. Vyavaharika. Vyavaharika jiva is saying. So I have the individual here that I'm identifying with right here and now, like this. This is also an individual. This is also a jiva, like this. This is, or this is chit. Actually, he used chit, because chit, consciousness. It's a conscious being, the character in the dream, and it's a conscious being here too, like this. One is the dealing with this world, one dealing with that world there. So Vishnu had a joke he used to say about this, you know, how, you know, building the castles in the air. He said, what is the difference between the neurotic, the psychotic, and the psychiatrist, right? This is a joke for Nima. So he'd say, right, the psychotic builds castles in the air. The neurotic goes and lives in the castle. The psychiatrist collects the rent. So, this is building the castle in the air, and collecting the rent is the vyavaharika. Paramartika. Pratibhasika, vyavaharika, and paramartika. So paramartika, this one is the absolute. Oh, you remember OC, we had AC, OC, original consciousness, reflected consciousness we'll have in here. So what happens then is we have these three. So little, Swami Vishnu used to say three eyes. He would love to give talks, three eyes, which is this, same thing. Interesting, because many things I heard weren't explained in from the same angle or detail as here, just because the school that I was in, all the years, Shivananda Centers, which wonderful teachings and everything, it's kind of like undergrad, I would say. So all these points, were given, but not in the depth or angle that Vedanta teaching is given, because it's just not the school for that. This is like going graduate in this angle, from this angle. So what happens is, three eyes, he'd say instinct, what was it, intellect and intuition. So instinct is, would be more this one. Intellect is the individual. The individual base of mind is the intellect. That's a reflecting medium. I think the intellect is conscious. That's then the jiva, the individual. And then intuition here. But we use these other terms because they're a little bit more refined, I could say, in explaining this. That's why Vedanta uses slight different terms. The angle how he would explain, he would use it from that angle. He has very nice talks about that if you could find. So in any case, from here then this one is just myself, the consciousness. Now what is, and here it's called avachinna chaitanyam, or avachinna chitta calls it. The limited consciousness with some limitation. Now what happens is, it's kind of like if you take the space in a box, right? Or usually it's called the pot space. That's the example usually given, because probably in the older times there, boxes weren't common, but clay pots were very common because everybody would go to the well every day and collect water. So it was very common. So the space in the pot. So the space in the pot is there, but seemingly limited, but not really limited. So the space is just space. So that's where this one is pointing out at the space. So what happens is, this one, myself as this waking individual, is more real relative to the dream one. More real than that, because the dream one was just ephemeral idea in my mind, came and went. So there's a certain relationship where this one, like the snake, has less reality than the rope. Of course, it has some reality. You can't say zero reality on the one hand, but on the other hand, it doesn't have substantial reality because there's no substance to snake, only to rope, because this was the rope. So there's a gradation there. So relatively more real. So in the same way, if you go from here to here, same from here to here, that the absolute one, absolute reality, is going to be more real than the waking, just like the dream to waking, waking to absolute reality. That's what he's going to be pointing out in this section. He's going to be discussing this point, the relation between these, how dream to waking, like waking to absolute consciousness, right? Snake to rope, same way, like rope to the substance, the Brahman behind it, like this. This is the point. And here in this verse right now, he said, Tatra adyaha paramartikaha. From these three, right, then the first one, the avachinna chaitanyam, the original consciousness, which seemingly is limited, this is the one that's one with Brahman. It's not when I'm trying to see, okay, I am the same as the universal consciousness. What do you mean by I am that one? It's not myself as the physical body, not myself as this limited individual as my mind, not myself as the idea, the dream, but myself, the consciousness, the conscious being. So this is the same as the Brahman. These ones aren't the same as Brahman. It's like you can't say the snake is a rope. The snake is a projection on the rope. But yeah, so what happens is, this is, if you're saying I am Brahman, you have to know where to look for it. It's in this one, not the other two, because the other two are the projections. You'll try to go after them, you'll never, if you do an exercise, you really try to go to the base of them, you're not going to find them. The dream one we already know, because we wake up from the dream, we get confused in the dream, but once we come out of it, in the daydream too, because I'm caught up in the things. The moment I notice it was a daydream, oh, it's just another thought, okay, so it's not what's really here. But the moment you wake up from the dream, then you're not caught up anymore, you know it didn't have substantial reality. So, same way, that doesn't have substantial. This one, this individual's waking, it doesn't have a substantial reality if you really go into it. So one of the things we do is, in Vedanta, as you've seen, the study, if you really, to really look into it. You look into what appears to be there. The more you look into and understand it from a certain angle, then the more you see that it is mithya. It doesn't have substantial existence. And then if something does have substantial existence, it's not as important. It has less, because it can't have that control over us like this. So this is, he's setting the stage, giving these terms to us like this. These are the important things. Mm-hmm. So let's see how he continues discussing this. Avacheda kalpitasyat avachedyam cha vastavam tu vastavam tasmin jivatvam aropat brahmatvam tu swabhavatah. The limitation is imagined, but the sakshi, the pure awareness upon which the limitation is projected, is the reality. Therefore, the status of sakshi as jiva occurs due to superimposition, whereas its nature as Brahman is in it. So what happens, he's saying, he's calling it here, as we said again, avachinna chaitanyam, the limited consciousness. Same as the limited space in the pot space. So he says like this, the space in the pot is always just the space. The fact that it's limited is just an idea. Because really, the pot is in the space. It's not the space is in the pot. There's no such thing as a pot space. If I make a pot right here, and then I dissemble it somehow, and I make it again, did it now capture a different part of the space? That space is free now. This space is limited. The space was never broken. It was always just one continuous space, just seemingly broken up. So the idea that the space in the pot is the real space. It's the same. They say ghata kasha. Ghata is pot. So ghata kasha, spot, pot space. Maha kasha, the entire space. So ghata kasha, maha ka is always maha kasha. It's not really separate. It's an idea that it's separate. So the pot space is always just the space. The limitation is just an idea that it's limited. So he's pointing out here, when he's talking about the avachinna chaitanyam, limited consciousness, I feel I'm consciousness, and somehow I'm limited by this body-mind. I feel that it's like this. So he's saying that consciousness is the same as the universal consciousness. There's no such thing as consciousnesses, just consciousness. That which is limiting it, this one is false. It doesn't really limit it. Just seemingly limits it. It doesn't really do it. So this is what he's pointing out. Yes, that consciousness which you are, yes, that is the one I'm talking about. But the confusion is that I think it's limited. That's the confusion, like this. So really, Vedanta is sorting out our confusion, that's all. That's what Vedanta says, no more than sorting out our confusion. There's nothing more than nothing more needed. So in any case. So one other example can be given here about this. You have the mirror, right? Because reflected consciousness, the reflection in the mirror. You have the space reflected in the mirror, reflected space, right? Now, the mirror breaks. Where did that space go? Where did it go? You have a dream, you wake up. Where did all the dream characters go? They never existed. So where did the space in the mirror go? It never existed. It just seemed to be there, like this. So same with this individual, the Pratibhasika or Vyavaharika, the Vyavaharika one, the dream one went away, wasn't real. This one went gone. If you remember when we first started talking about consciousness, when we said about, we discussed about how it's not limited to the body, enlivens the body, like this, all these points about. Doesn't just go away when the body goes away. Body, mind are gone. Consciousness doesn't go away. As we said, that's how the deep sleep. I recollect deep sleep because I was still there even though body, mind weren't functioning then. They weren't. From my perspective, there's no body or mind. But I know I was there because I had a good sleep. So I can attest to it. You know, they'll take you to court. You'll have to sit there. I'll tell the whole truth. You know, nothing but the truth. The absolute truth. If you want to sit the Vedanta, they'll tell them the absolute truth, they'll just sit silently. Why aren't you answering the question? Well, if I open my mouth, it won't be absolute truth. But what happens is, how did I get to aside to that fun and silly joke? What happens is, if we go back to this mirror thing, you know, when you break the mirror, what's appeared there will be gone because it never really had a base. The dream you wake up never had a base. So if I take away body or mind, like in the deep sleep, there's no way for it to be part of Vyavahara, part of the objective world, transactional world like this. There's no force, so it can't connect. The moment that there is a reflection, a way for reflect, then it can reflect and it can connect with other things. So, but the whole body-mind, though, is mitya because it just seems to be conditioning. Seems to condition the consciousness, but doesn't really condition it. This is what it is. So when the mirror breaks, the space inside goes away because the space never was there. But the mirror takes up a certain amount of space. That stays there. Regardless, the mirror's there. You do something to make the mirror bigger, you know, stretch it somehow. You break it, the mirror's gone. That space remains the same regardless. So the original consciousness, the Paramartika, Chaitanyam, constantly there. Nothing changes it. Seems to be limited, but isn't really limited. This is what he's pointing out. So it's not that I have to get to that consciousness. It's right there all the time. I know I'm conscious, but I feel that it's limited, which is just an idea, but not the reality. Because also the idea that I'm limited, it's an idea, meaning it's a thought. That's why you do some yoga or meditation, that thought goes away. Oh, I feel so good. How nice. But the thing is, it's kind of like what we do when we do that. It's kind of like right now in the backyard, we have the vegetable garden, and we also have some, there's area between the beds, so weeds come up, so now there's some weeds there. So in a week or so, I'll go and I'll weed whack again. And what'll happen is, a few weeks later, they start coming up again. That's like doing your yoga, meditation, quiet down. Oh, I can feel, I don't feel limited. But we didn't get rid of the roots. So then they start coming up again. And then before I know it, the weeds are everywhere and I'm all caught up in everything again. So just the quieting the mind like this, it shows me, yes, I'm not limited by, but the full understanding isn't there. So when the condition comes back, I still take the condition as real. So the understanding has to be that the condition isn't real. Nice term, we probably have brought it up before. Praptasya praptihi. Obtain, right? Obtain in Sanskrit, aptaha. So praptasya praptihi. Obtaining what is already obtained. Anything else that I try to obtain is something that I didn't have before. Since I didn't have before, I get it now, means that after some time, I won't have it. I'll lose it, it will break, I'll give it away, something will happen. No matter what you get, you know. I get a very sharp mind, great. Then I'll get old and I'll get forgetful. Sorry, Padma, who some of you know, then he was already kind of forgetful. He was getting older, even more forgetful. Now he's doing wonderful service in Africa. He's originally from South Africa. So he'd say, it's wonderful to be forgetful as I'm getting older. You can tell me the same joke tomorrow and I'm going to laugh just as hard at it. So anything you obtain that you don't have can be lost. What you already have, the only way you obtain it is to notice that it's already there. So here it's noticing it's already there by just clarifying, removing our misunderstanding. This is all. And they say, Maya Shakti, it's feminine. So it's misunderstanding. It's not Mr. Understanding, because it's a miss. That's that's what happens here. So maybe that's the reason why they made it feminine. To be careful, the moment you have multiple languages, then word jokes can get more and more strange or silly or whatever, but it's nice we can make them. So like this, so in this way. So this is what happens. Remember the reflecting medium in the mind? The reflection seems to limit something. So the original consciousness reflected in the mind, the reflecting medium. There's the reflected consciousness, and I think I'm that. That's the model he gave before. Now he's saying it's like the space. You're the consciousness. The fact that you're limited is an idea. It's nothing more than that. You know, take away that idea, where's the limitation? Or understand it's just an idea. Then what's the problem? It's just an idea. Like a game. You play a game with somebody. Okay, it's a game. You got caught up and you remember it's just a game. What does it really mean? So in this way. So then he's going to say this. Avachinnasya jivasya purnena brahmanaikatam tattvamasyadi vakyani jagurnetara jivayoho. The Upanishadic statements such as tattvamasi, thou art that, you are Brahman, declare the identity between Sakshi and the fullness which is Brahman, but not the identity between Brahman and the other two jivas, the reflected consciousness or imagined one. So what happens is in Vedanta then, one of the methodologies used is the Mahavakya. I don't think in this text we got into Tattva Bodha slightly. So pointer the points, you're that one, right? This one, it means you are the Brahman, like this. And so those are used, and then of course, in order to really get to the meaning of it, tat has to be understood. Tvam has that, the Brahman. That's why we did the understanding of the external world and those meditations on the external. Tvam, the individual, you, has to be understood. And then a see, why are they one and the same? How come they're not different? So he's saying, so when you're looking at Tvampadat, yourself, understand it's not pointing to this or this jiva, not the imagined jiva, not the objective jiva, not either of those conscious beings. This one is that one. When you're saying Tattvamasi, you're Brahman, the one you imagine the dream, no, not that one, because that one is an imagined one. Doesn't have a reality. Well, then it's this one. No, it can't be this one, because this one also is an idea. It's this one. This one is the Brahman. So point out, that is what it means by you are the Brahman. There's the Acharya we had when I was in our centers in New York, Swami Shankarananda. So he said first time he went to Shivananda Ashram in Rishikesh. At that time, also when I visited there first time, Swami Krishnananda was there, one of Swami Shivananda's most brilliant disciples. And he had a very, very sharp mind. There's a hospital ward there, their free hospital. He would go sit there, a certain room there, every day, morning, afternoon, same time, every day. Anybody from could come there. People all around the world would come and sit there, ask anything they want, and like this. So when Swami Shankarananda went there first time, he asked him, "Who are you?" And Swami Krishnananda. He said, "Oh, I'm Swami Shankarananda. I'm Swami Vishwanathanji's disciple, and I was born in South Africa, and I'm director of our ashram in this place, this. He said, "Yeah, you, with all that in your mind, you want to go to Brahmaloka. You want to go to highest place with all this in your mind." Meaning, he was very sharp like this, no nonsense. You know, you want to hold on to this and this, and you want to see that. You want to eat the banana, but you don't want to peel it. Right? You want to have a mango. My wife got a pomegranate a few weeks ago, because she gets from me some of the time things that have high iron in this, because I can, you know, become low on iron. So what happens then is, I hadn't eaten it yet, it's in the fridge. Why? It takes a lot, you know, banana I eat every day, it's good for the tummy. But this one takes a lot of work to peel, so it's still sitting there. So I want this one without peeling these off. You have to peel these off if you want this, and you have to put them aside. Otherwise, how are you going to eat the pomegranate if you don't do that? Nowadays, they'll make, I'm sure you can find a gadget that will go like a juicer or some type thing. They'll take the pomegranate and get the stuff on it and peel and make the juice for you and everything. You know, not a problem. You can surely Trader Joe's or something, go and they'll have the pomegranate outside of the peel that they did. You can get it outside. So external world, you can always find a gadget or with some money, you get somebody to do the things. Not a problem. But this one, you can't outsource, you know. Other things you can outsource, but this one, unoutsourceable. You cannot. So they have to peel, put those aside. That's the one he's talking about. So it's kind of like when saying this one, you have to know how to discard this one. Know the, what happens then, is when somebody tells you something, a term, they say a word to you, the word, if you go to the dictionary, it has a direct meaning to it, which is what we're used to in our language. Like when I said pomegranate, you can think of, you know, the round red thing. Somehow the word in English didn't come to my mind. The Hebrew word came, because I grew up with them in Israel, and this is somehow didn't come. So I was saying, in English, what are we saying? It's not coming to my mind, because pomegranate, not a word that I say every day. Because, you know, a few times a year we have a pomegranate in the house. So, so what happens, though, is when you say pomegranate, you know that as the meaning. This is the direct meaning of it. But what happens is we also use the indirect meanings of things so much of the time in English. I'll tell you, you'll say, oh, where's the pomegranate? I know you brought it from the store, where is it? I'll tell you, I ate the pomegranate. You will understand that I took this, I took off the shell, and that inner kind of peeling I took off. And those little parts of the pomegranate, the little parts which like seeds with the pulp around it, that I took those out and I ate them. And then I took the rest of it and I discarded it somehow. Right? Threw it in the garbage, in the green bin, in my compost, something, I got rid of it. You'll understand all this, that I ate that part of it. Not that I had the whole thing. So you'll understand the indirect meaning, because the direct meaning pomegranate is that whole fruit. The indirect is just that part of it. So you automatically discard part of it and keep part of it. Like this. You do that, and we do it all the time. We do it all the time in our language. So much of the time when we hear a word, we know the direct meaning, but then we also, the indirect we point at so much of the time, which the indirect meaning in many cases like this one is a part of it. Part we put aside, part we keep, like this. In this class we didn't go and it didn't discuss it, but this one was discussed in the Thursday class that we have with in Pancha Dashi. He mentioned this term. This is called Bhaga Tyaga Lakshana. Bhaga Tyaga Lakshana. Oh, this is getting dry. Like I said, this marker is getting dry. You understand that the tip part is kind of getting dry. You know the rest of it, it's not dry. So even this, you did bhagat. When I said this marker is getting dry, you understood it through bhagatyaga lakshana. Bhaga. So let's replace him. Bhaga Tyaga Lakshana. Bhaga is a portion. Tyaga is to put aside, right? To get rid of. Lakshana, indirect, the indicator meaning, indirect meaning, because an indicator means it's indirect. I'm pointing there, look there, mean not at the finger, but at what it's pointing at. So indirect, an indirect meaning. So the pointer to, so what happens is, in this way you get rid of, you discard a certain portion of the object, but you keep some of it. That's bhagatyaga lakshana, indirect meaning. Indirect meaning mean you don't throw the whole thing out, you throw just a portion out. Because when I ate the, when I say I ate the pomegranate, then it's not that I, you know I didn't throw all of it out, you know that I consumed part of it. So you, that part you keep in your mind that I ate, the rest of it you throw out. So here, what is all of this good for that we're saying about this? This is exactly this tattvamasi, what he's pointing at. There's the, you have these different components. Your component, your idea, mental ideas, projections. You have yourself as this individual and you're a conscious being. You have to drop off those projections, discard them. You have to discard your identity as the body, mind, and this, as limited individual. And then that and the consciousness remains, that's the one that is, we're talking about tattvamasi. That's the one which is the tattvam. Tattvamasi. Tattvam means essence. Tattvamasi, you're that one. But we can, in Sanskrit, we can play around. Tattvamasi can also mean you're the essence. That's not how it's used. It's not how, it's not what the, no text says that, but it does also mean, in Sanskrit, if you merge those words together, tattvamasi, you're the essence, it means that, it can mean it from that way. But you're the Brahm. You and the Brahman are one and the same. So you're the, so that's what the, what he's saying here. Remember, that's what is the Brahman. That's what it is. That's why I don't see, feel as that, because what I feel I'm, you know, I feel my back hurts, I feel I'm worried because of this or that. Well, that's part of the, that shell, the covering that needs to be discarded. And of course, when I ate the, when I consumed the fruit, then I physically discarded it like this. Here, you can't physically discard it. How are you going to physically discard yourself, your part? I'm going to, you know, each part of me I'm going to put aside. So I'll take my head and I'll put it aside. I can't do that. Ravana can take some heads and put them aside, right? But we can't take the head and put it aside. I have to put my hand aside. What am I going to carry it with? So it's through understanding. Because also when I say that I ate the fruit, you separate those things in understanding. You don't actually physically do anything. You just understand. So it's an understanding. What is the part that is discarded, that is the mithya? What is the part that is there? That understanding. And that one is the essence, like this. So this is how, what it's pointing out here. So it's what he was saying. Avachinna jivasya purnena brahmana ekatam. It is one with Brahman, but purnena, purna by complete, right? Purnena. This is right, the tritiya vibhakti for our Sanskrit people, the third, the instrumental. So with, it's one with the Brahman complete. It's not a partial thing. Kind of like it. Like, you know, it's has some similarity. It's not like this. It's not, you know, your nephew goes and plays basketball and you'll say, boy, you're just like LeBron James, or you're just like, you know, Curry, like this, right? It depends. Some people say like Curry, they're going to get, why this Curry? Some people say like LeBron James, what? You're not from the Bay Area. Ask some Scottish like this. Identification, one team or the other, like this. But in any case, it's not, that part of you is like that one. Or it is a part that, is a spark of the divine. It's a part of the, it's a small part of the divine. It's not that complete. It's the Brahman. Just like the pot space is the space. There's no such thing as the separation of the space. It's an idea. So it's saying that consciousness, which is you, which when you discard these other ideas, it is the Brahman. Not part. Brahman has no parts. Not similar to. Not it will become, not the Brahman forgot itself, part Brahman forgot itself and somehow got caught up in this mind and caught up here and wants to be free and get out. None of those things. It is that one. That's it. So he's saying don't think it, don't any other ways. And I can say, well, you know, I'm not advanced in Vedanta, you know, so for now I'll take it that it's just a small part of it, like this. Okay, beginning meditation thing, a part of divine is in you at the beginning. But then at some point I have to say, no, this is the Brahman done. Don't, if you shortchange it, then. Now we say, so it's manifest as the Sakshi. Witnessing consciousness, right? Dhritisha Viveka, it's the Sakshi, the witness. That's what we're saying, that it's manifest as that. This is also just an indicator of what Brahman is, Sakshi. Because Sakshi, there has to be awareness, something in the light of awareness. Take away everything else. Brahman isn't gone. Brahman's still there. So Sakshi is just an indicator. It's not the nature. It's an indicator of Brahman. I'm a conscious being. The nature that if something can be within the field of awareness, I'm aware of it. But that's just conditional. When nothing in the field of awareness, I'm still the consciousness. So it is manifest as Sakshi, but it isn't, but that's not its absolute nature. Absolute nature always there. Not, that's just dependent on certain condition. Like Swami Paramarthanandaji, how he would put this, he says like this, I'm teacher, he says, I'm sitting, I'm teacher now. So you guys are your I'm teacher. Now everybody leaves. Where the teacherness, teacher tuam, where the teacherness go? It's gone. I'm still here. He says, now my guru comes. So now I'm shishya, now I'm disciple, right? Now my guru goes away. Where's disciple? It's gone. I'm still here. So yes, from the Vyavaharika perspective, this world perspective, yes. From the body-mind perspective also, I'm the awareness, aware of the body-mind, Sakshi, yes. But that's not absolute terms, that's a relative term. Because body-mind gone, world gone, I'm still the Brahman, but not Sakshi, because there's nothing to be Sakshi of, like this. So this is, it's also, so Sakshi that way is also an indicator, Drik is an indicator, but not the absolute nature. Absolute nature, of course, as we said, yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasasaha, the mind, the words cannot grasp it. That's why everything anywhere will be an indicator. You'll say non-dual. Well, non, it's an indicator. You'll say infinite, not finite, indicator. You can't grasp like this. So words will be indicators, but this is an indicator also because infinite will say, yes, it's not limited by anything. But here, it's conditional, you know, there has to be finite forever infinite. There has to be drik and drishya. There has to be some field for to be Sakshi, the Sakshi of everything in this way. So in this way, so this is what is being pointed out. This is an important thing like this, that then, that understanding this is, the pointer he's wanting to say as that it's that you as the Sakshi, you are the Brahman completely. No partial, no, you know, no partial, no, you know, it's nothing else. Completely that, finished in this way. Mm-hmm. Next one, he starts going, continuing the thought, but going slightly something else. So let's leave that for the next time so we don't just part, do it and not completely like this. So I think it would be good to start that one next time, not to just do a few minutes and then and not do justice to it. So let's include with this today. We can discuss any questions that may have come up. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So any questions you may have, please can feel free. No questions, then forever hold your peace. You'll be at peace. Yes, yes, Nima.
So, something I've been studying for maybe a couple of years now,
mm-hmm.
Is Tibetan meditation,
mm-hmm.
like Mahamudra meditation. And then more recently, maybe in the last year, I came across the work of Douglas Harding, which is The Headless Way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very simple, you turn awareness back, like using visual gaze, and notice that you can't see your own face. And when I do it, I can shift into a sort of a non-dual view. So I'm not caught in the view of like Nemo walking around, it's awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Is this pointing to the same perspective shift, like into a non-dual view? It seems very similar, but it's also new to me, the, you know, Dvigdisha, Viveka, and Vedanta.
It sounds, it is very similar, because when you act like that as observing yourself, then kind of like your idea of individual gets blurred like this. It doesn't have as much substance. So it helps you to have some experience what it's like, you know, to see that, you know, the individual doesn't really have the substance. Now, the thing is, the Vedanta side of it, it's for the experience of understanding it. Because otherwise, it stays at the experiential level. And that experiential level, experience shifts and changes. So then later on, when that's not there, then, you know, then I still, okay, I can be in that state, and I can also be not in that state. This is what happens. Now, doing that with the background of Dvigdisha Viveka can be much more insightful, because you can say, yes, I'm the observer, and what is observed can be there or not be there, and the body, mind are observed, they might be there, might not, like this. So it can help in this way when you use it with this background. But here the understanding is not just when that's happening, but it's a very good tool for sure. Because it can point out to you, yes, that you're there regardless whether you experience body or mind, and that they're not as solid, and that they're object like this. So it can be very, very useful, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Does it lead in the direction of sort of both the understanding and the experience become stabilized in a non-dual view, and there's a lot less getting caught in the view of the individual?
The thing is, here, through the understanding that it doesn't matter whether you're doing a practice that time or not. Because the thing is, if I know I'm the sakshi, the conscious, I just know I'm witnessing awareness. Okay, body comes and goes within that. Then I know I'm not, if I totally understand I'm not the body mind, doesn't matter whether I'm turning my gaze to them or not, I know it's just a shadow, it doesn't have substance. So the understanding helps with this, then it doesn't matter what and where I'm doing. He said here, yata, yato, yato, mano, yati, tatra, tatra, samadhayaha. That was here or in the other text? I think it was here. That's the problem, these two texts, they have some similarity that I forget. No, it's not in this one, it's the other text. So it says, somebody in this state, anywhere they gaze, it's the same samadhi, because you know it's the same thing. You're the same one. So the understanding that it doesn't matter what state you're in. Yeah. So again, that kind of exercise coupled with this can be very helpful, because then you're understanding and practicing with the understanding. Because then when I observe myself this, when I observe and there's pain in the body or mind is busy, I can see, okay. And yes, it will loosen up. Part of the loosening is less caught up in the stuff in the mind. That's the loosening. But then full understanding, you know, like you pulling the stone out, is that one just knows. And then, you know, one nice thing Swami Paramatthananda says the difference, the jnani, something comes up, can be very disturbing, something, they'll say, you know, we say what? So maybe it'll be what? But very quickly, for them, it'll turn to so what? Oh yeah, okay, so. Because it's still part of this. So the less I get caught in, In Gita, I think we discuss, you know, it's the how often I get disturbed by the things I'm caught up, right? How often it is. How intense is the experience from it? How much it knocks me off of my balance? And how fast I get out of it? Those three things will get less and less. So in this way, so that's why just by the study of these of this, maybe it hasn't solved anything yet, but I do it regularly for half a year. I can measure by that yes, it does has made a difference. Meaning maybe I'm not completely, but we'll say. But in jnana, yeah, then it'll just be clear. It should be very clear that, you know, if it can't get, if it's fog, it's fog very little, and for, you know, it can't be do too much damage like that.
Thank you.
Yes, April. Yes.
This, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay. The kind of what you were just discussing reminded me of something that I read recently, kind of a, I guess it was part of a blog, some type of weekly publication that comes out, and mm-hmm. it was using the term spiritual bypassing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very interesting article, and it made me think about some of the courses that are given at, in the Shivananda centers on positive thinking. And I think that is really important. At the same time, it was sort of, I think, maybe questioning that a little bit, or just making us think critically about it, because with all of the suffering, especially more so, it seems, this year in so many aspects in our world, to continuously have that positive thinking, or the what you were just discussing, that to kind of the so what, that okay, I can move on. But this article is, I guess it was just acknowledging that this is important. It's an important practice, but also we don't want to move into that sort of spiritual bypassing where all of this suffering is happening, but it's okay. And I think I'm sort of having difficulty figuring out how to approach that in my practice. I want to, I do want to be able to move on and not get so caught up in all of the suffering, but that I don't want to bypass the suffering and sure. think, okay, it's all okay, because there's more than this material world when there actually is so much suffering happening.
Sure, sure. Let's just give it, you know, very short explanation now. Let's discuss more next week because of our time limitation. But what happens is, yes, as an individual, you have to do your duties to do. Like, for instance, you know, you have children or you have an ailing parent. You have to do that. You're a jnani, not a jnani. It's your duty to do. So your caring for society and for everything is your duty. Like this, that's your duty. It doesn't change who you are like this. If you're too caught up in that, you're not going to be able to see who you are. If you're callous, you're not going to be able to see either, because you're identifying just with yourself, self-centeredness like this. So what happens is, yes, you are that unlimited one, but then as long as you're in this limited thing, then your duty is done, and that's part of it. To care for everything and to take care of what you can like this. Now, if somebody doesn't have the spiritual bent in this, let them just serve. It's great. That's great. Eventually, when they have the interest, they'll look into. When one of Swami Shivananda's disciples was saying how he was working very hard in the infirmary all day and working and running this, and then Swami Shivananda said to him, don't forget why you came here, not just to be serve, not just to serve, but you have to have your time for your meditation like this. So yes, for purifying the heart, karma yoga important. Yes, for taking care of the world like this, but that is endless. The suffering is endless. We're saying now there's more suffering. There's always suffering. The world there always was, always will be. That's the way it is. And so to have compassion and do some service that we can help, that service will help us more than help others, because it'll purify our heart, not like this, because we're not going to fix the suffering of the world. You know, we do something that helps, that's wonderful, but, you know, we can also take credit for it. We don't know what portion of it really was, you know, me, and then also that I did, you know, I'll think I did my ego, I did something. So yes, we have to do, but it doesn't contradict, because you're still that one. So escape, Vedanta then isn't escaping, but it's understanding like this. So this is, in short, we can discuss a little bit more in detail next class, because, you know, we have a few minutes and then we have to have the next class. So unfortunately, we have that time limitation this Sunday. You have a very good question.